Next, we have an interview with Philip Mitchell from the Verulam Writers Group. Welcome to Phil Mitchell, who is the chair of the Verulam Writers Group and is here with me in the studio.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So, Phil, can you give me some background about the Writers Group, how it came to be and your involvement in it?
Yes, so Verulam Writers has now been going 70 years in St Albans. So we've got about 40 members at the moment. It was set up originally just a group of professional and published authors got together. They wanted a place where they could share and critique their work. And that's where it's continued from. But it's now open to absolutely everybody. So we have complete beginners to experienced, prolific authors, which makes like really good forum for critique and all different opinions. And it's just a very lively group to go to and read your work to.
So you get feedback from other members?
Yes, yeah, which could be a terrifying thing to do, especially your first time. You do have to be very brave, but everybody's very nice. The rule is it has to be constructive. Nobody is there to tear it apart and put you down. The aim is to make the writing the best it can be. So, yeah, it's a very encouraging place.
And if I was partially sighted, how would that work in that sense? Could I join in?
Yes, you could. So everybody uses a microphone to read out their stories. So it's all verbal. So you can hear what's going on and critique it. We do project the stories as well, which is a relatively recent development for people that couldn't hear very well. But we're not about correcting spelling and grammar. We're just looking at the flow of the words and the story. So anybody is welcome. It's also fully accessible. We moved venue recently because people were having trouble with the stairs. So we moved to a venue that's like wheelchair accessible. If any problems at all with mobility, it's accessible. So we take it very seriously because we want everybody to get involved regardless.
So tell me how you got involved and your background and your writing background specifically.
Yes. Okay. So I always tell people I've been writing seriously for about 7 years, which is when I moved to St Albans from Peterborough. And I found myself in St Albans and didn't really know anybody, but also I'd played in bands when I was in Peterborough. And that stopped when I moved to St Albans. And I found myself without a creative outlet. Yeah, which was getting me quite down, really. And I was like, well, what can I do? I was trying to form a band, but I couldn't find a band to join. So I thought, well, I've always liked writing, and there'd been periods in my life when I tried writing poetry and novels. So I thought, right, okay, I've got to give it a go again. And then so I started scribbling in notebooks on my way to work, and everything I wrote was terrible. Then I saw a creative writing course at Oakland College, and I ummed and ahed about it. And my girlfriend at the time was like, just do it. So I signed up to it. Again, it's quite scary because you're putting yourself out there, putting your words on a page for everybody to see. So I joined the course, and it was absolutely brilliant. Made some really good friends. And from there, I went and did a master's, but I also joined Verulam Writers, which was a great thing to do. Met a lot of very encouraging people. And I think it is having that creative outlet, I think is important for a lot of people to have a creative outlet, whether, it's knitting or it's painting or whatever it happens to be. I think it's a very healthy thing to have. And yeah, I enjoy it a lot. I mean, writing can be very frustrating. It's not an easy thing to do. And you write some stories and they just go nowhere, and you think, what a waste of time that was. But you just keep going, and the next story is a lot better.
Okay, thanks, Phil. I think now would be a good time to read your short story.
Okay, Lenny. I blew dust from the record, placed it on the turntable and lowered the arm. With a scratch and a hiss, Jailhouse Rock burst from the speakers. Turn it up, Grandad, Lenny said, and I turned the volume dial until the floor vibrated and the windows rattled. Lenny's little head bounced upon his shoulders and he tapped his feet. His arms swung as his skinny body twisted to the rhythm, feet moving in a blur, left and right and back and forth, first grazing the carpet, then lifting higher so he jumped to the music. He giggled and grinned. What is this? He asked. It's the King, I said. It's Elvis. I joined him in dancing, forcing my stiff body to turn, my heavy arms to swing. My feet remained still, knees too creaky to move. Lenny smiled at me. "Who's Elvis?" he asked. "He's legend, the best singer there ever was." As the next song started, I sat down in my chair, took a few deep breaths and rested while Lenny spiralled and whirled. "Is Elvis dead?" Lenny shouted above the music. "Like Grandma?" I nodded and looked at the photograph sat on the mantelpiece of my wife, Mary, wearing her perfect smile, head turned slightly to the left, hair freshly curled and styled, never looking more beautiful. "It's sad he's dead. He's amazing," said Lenny. The songs continued. Heartbreak Hotel, It's Now or Never, Burning Love. And as Lenny danced, each melody brought memories of Mary. Driving to the seaside, the radio turned up and the windows down, singing Elvis so loud our voices cracked, laughing at the bemused look of people in passing cars. Dancing cheek to cheek in the kitchen as the aroma of warm apple pie wafted from the oven, and our day trip to Madame Tussauds in London, where Mary duetted with a young Elvis made from wax, invisible microphone clutched in her hand, posing as I took photo after photo. I wiped away a tear before Lenny saw it. Lenny didn't tire. When the first side of the record ended, I turned it over and played the other. His bright eyes sparkled at the start of each song. When his father, my son David, came to pick him up, Lenny was fast asleep on the sofa. "He's exhausted," I said. "He's been dancing to Elvis." "Elvis," said David, the poor boy. "You used to like Elvis." "I didn't have a choice. It's all you and Mum would ever listen to." He laughed and scooped Lenny off the sofa, laying him over his shoulder. Lenny opened his eyes and asked, "Is Grandma a legend like Elvis?" David turned and looked at me, smiling. "I guess she is," I said. The following weekend, Lenny ran into the house with David close behind. "Grandad, Grandad," he said. "You'll never guess what." "What?" I asked, as he threw his arms around my waist and squeezed tight. "Elvis is coming to town. He's not dead." I laughed with David. Lenny let me go, ran over to the records and began to pull out all the Elvis albums. "Careful," I said, "they're fragile." "There's an Elvis tribute act playing next weekend," said David. "I'll pay you if you want to go with Lenny. A thank you for looking after him." I hadn't been for an evening out since Mary died. "I don't need thanking, he's a joy, but yes, I'd love to go." Lenny and I played Elvis all day, one record after another, the music only stopping to change sides. Mary watched from the mantelpiece. She would have loved this. The next weekend, I brushed down my suit, shined my shoes, and waited for Lenny. I stared at Mary's photograph as I waited. Our one regret was not seeing the real Elvis in concert. We'd had the money, the chance to book flights and head to America, but for some reason or another, we kept putting it off. Then David came along. When Elvis passed away, Mary and I cried in each other's arms, listening to the news on the radio. It was like our best friend had died. I saw David and Lenny pull up outside, and I got in the car's back seat next to Lenny. Elvis was playing on the CD player, Always on My Mind. "Elvis will be great," said Lenny. His hair was styled like Elvis's slick pompadour, and he wore a pair of his father's aviator sunglasses. David's eyes appeared in the rearview mirror. "He looks great, doesn't he?" he asked. "The king would be proud," I said. We took our seats at the front of the hotel's function room. Disco lights flashed blue, red, yellow, green, dappling the carpets and illuminating the chipped magnolia paint of the walls. A microphone stand stood centre of the stage next to a laptop on a rickety table. No orchestra, no band, no musicians. Lenny fidgeted excitedly in his chair as the audience filled, a packed crowd of middle-aged and elderly couples. "It's the king!" Lenny shouted, pointing to the back of the room. The surrounding crowd laughed. Elvis strode down the aisle through the audience, overweight, sweating, skin plastered so heavily in makeup it looked like cheese. A glossy black nylon wig and a white sequin jumpsuit, a yellow stain on one sleeve. As he walked past, he swigged a pint of lager, and I caught the whiff of stale cigarette smoke. He took the microphone, and in a thick American drawl, tinged with a heavy Liverpool accent, Elvis welcomed us all. "Elvis!" Lenny squealed with delight. Elvis pointed a finger at Lenny. "Good to see you, little man," he said. Lenny looked at me, mouth agape, before turning back to Elvis and waving. Elvis fiddled with his laptop. Something wasn't working. "Just a minute, folks," he said, still in character. Suddenly Hound Dog started. Elvis struck a pose and sang. His voice was as powerful as the king's. He shook his legs, swiveled his hips and snarled his lips. I imagine Mary sitting next to me, gripping the edge of her seat, singing along as if we were in Vegas. More songs followed. All shook up. Don't be cruel, hard-headed woman. After each song, Lenny clapped his hands louder than anyone and his screams of delight pierced the applause. Before the next song started, Elvis knelt on one knee and beckoned Lenny to join him. Lenny leapt onto the stage. Any requests, little man? Elvis asked. A song for my grandma and granddad, Lenny said, looking down at me from the stage. Can't help falling in love. Elvis hovered over his laptop, pressing keys, and the music started. Lenny and Elvis swayed. Elvis began to sing, and after a couple of lines bent down and held the microphone so he and Lenny could sing together. Lenny did an excited little jump, smiled broadly, and began to sing. His young boy's high pitch was in perfect harmony with the rich baritone of Elvis. It was incredible. Lenny's sweet voice was just like Mary's. I closed my eyes and imagined her on stage, her favourite red dress swishing, duetting with Elvis, her dream come true. Elvis and Lenny shared the microphone for the whole song. I pulled a handkerchief from my breast pocket and wiped my eyes. The song finished to huge applause and Lenny took a bow. When Lenny jumped from the stage and sat down, he asked me, "Why are you crying, Grandad?" "I'm thinking of your grandma," I said. Lenny held my hand gently as he bounced along to the final few songs, ever so happy. The concert finished and Lenny and I sat on the curb outside waiting for David to pick us up. We watched as a bald, overweight man loaded speakers and spotlights from the function room into his small, rusty white van. He lay, a sequin suit, protected in clear plastic on the passenger seat, lit a cigarette and drove off. "Would Grandma have liked the song I sang?" asked Lenny. "Yes, very much." Lenny looked up at the sky, deep in thought. It was a clear, cold night and a few stars pierced through the orange glow from streetlights. "Do you miss Grandma?" he asked. "I miss her a lot," I said. Lenny was shivering. I held his cold hands and warmed them between mine. "Do you think she'll ever come back?" "How do you mean, Lenny?" "Like Elvis came back to sing tonight." "Maybe," I said. "Because she's a legend?" "That's right, Lenny. A legend like Elvis." Lenny suddenly sprang up from the curb and with an invisible microphone in hand, legs shaking wildly and lips snarled, he began to sing.
Is that based on a true story, or again, is that something?
It's
that...
not. No. Just from the imagination. Again, it was a prompt, but I couldn't tell you what the prompt was. Mm. But yeah, the first thing that popped into my head was this vision, this image of this little boy dancing with his granddad, and I drew it out from there. So,
yeah,
you know, involving Elvis and, well, to be honest, it's something I would do with my granddad. It's probably the Beatles, not Elvis. But yeah, there's something there I've dragged from memory and then just built upon it, which I think most people do when they write. There, you know, there's always some autobiographical detail in there, and you pull it in and you use it, and it gets warped and changed. But
yeah, it's quite unique, the sort of relationship that grandparents have with their grandchildren. It's different from parents and their children, I think.
Yes, yeah.
I think you captured it really well in there. The sort of, like, he's allowed to sort of go a bit crazy at his granddad.
Yes, yeah.
Granddad spoils him a bit.
Yes. Well, so I've got a five-year-old boy now, and, yeah, he's very much like Lenny.
So, obviously, I've been talking to you, and you're Philip Mitchell.
Yeah.
But you write under the name Stephen Mitchell.
Yes.
I can probably guess why, and I'll let you explain.
Yes, well, for anybody who hasn't been locked away in a cave for the last maybe 30 years, Phil Mitchell's quite a big character on EastEnders on the BBC and is too famous for the literary world. So I changed my name to Stephen Mitchell, which is my middle name. That is why. So all of my books, all of my stories are written under Stephen Mitchell.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, Phil. So how do we get in touch with the Verulam Writers Group if we wanted to join?
So the best way to get in contact is via our website. So the address is www.verulamwriters.org, and we've got a contact form on there, and that will send an email to one of us, and we'll reply from there.
Thanks very much, Phil / Stephen Mitchell.